Anything combat with Johnny K.
Anything combat, though.
Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, wherein we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K, and today we're joined by the head coach of Freestyle MMA. He was the coach of former UFC champion Alexander Volkanovski. Welcome to the show, Joe Lopez. How are you today, Joe?
Yeah, good. Thanks for having me on, Johnny.
Good to have you on, man. I just want to run this by you. I feel like, personally, ANZ MMA right now, New Zealand and Australia, is at the best place that it's ever been. So I just want to get your gauge on that, seeing that you deal with the New Zealanders and the Australians.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, a lot of, you know, like Izzy and Volk are not at the top again, but there's nothing stopping them getting back up there. So, yeah, with that sort of foundation, you know, a lot of the people now know that they can get there. You know, it's not something that's non-achievable.
So you at Freestyle, you know, you achieved so much with Volk. What do you think you guys need to do for the next generation to get another guy up there to that level?
Oh, we've got a new sort of generation happening now, you know, and it won't be too long before you'll see them up there. There's a couple of young guys there that are, you know, they've got the, I guess, the right attitude, the right mental, just everything, you know, their training, everything is just there, you know. It's just a matter of just getting them enough fights to get them into the big show.
Why do you think your coaching systems are effective compared to other coaches?
I don't know. It's just having a connection with the guys, I guess, watching the guys. And I guess there's a bit of trust between all of us that, you know, they trust what I'm suggesting is going to make them better. And, then everyone gets ahead, you know. But I don't think I'm doing anything different, you know, except just trying to make the boys and girls better, that's all.
How important is that trust building to you? How do you do that from a personal, you know, interpersonal relation as well as being their coach?
Realistically, you've got to be sort of a team member, you know. You can't be selfish or anything like that because, you know, although it's an individual sport, we need our team members for us to get better. So that trust within the team and then within me, that builds a good foundation, and then we just all move forward.
If you had a guy that was a little bit of an asshole, but he was very good at MMA and you could see that he would go the whole way, or you had somebody that wasn't as good, but he had a really good attitude. So the guy that's good has a terrible attitude, and a guy that's bad has a good attitude. Who would you much rather at Freestyle?
Look, it depends on if his attitude's bad towards his team members, I'll just get rid of him straight away, and I've done it heaps of times, you know. To me, one bad apple just spoils the whole lot, you know. So I'd rather have 10 good, you know, people that are not so talented than have a room full of idiots or assholes, you know. To me, it's you've got to have that good people, you know, and they've got to look after each other, because it's so easy to get hurt and so easy to hurt somebody else. And yeah, you don't want to do that on the mats. You want to do that, you know, in the cage or the ring or wherever you're at, you know, but not in the training room, you know. You want to have just go to the point where you're not hurting each other.
One bloke that, you know, you've been very vocal of, I've researched your other podcasts and stuff, is your relationship with Volk, as we know. And when he hit the ring, there were stories that, you know, he showed off ridiculous talent and you saw that he had those attributes and something different about him. And you also spoke about, you know, his couple first training sessions where he went ballistic and you were really impressed with him. So when you first met him, was he a coachable athlete?
Well, 100%, you know, he still is, you know what I mean? He still wants to learn. He still asks questions. And they're the sort of things that you want in the athletes, not when they get to a certain point and they go, hey, this got me here. This is all I need. You know, Volk, is still evolving. The same with everybody in the gym, you know, like he'll tell you the boys are getting that good that we have to change the way we do things, you know.
With that evolution, you know, we've seen Volk's last fight. He had that cracker, that ripper with Makhachev the first time, and then he absolutely destroyed Yair. And then, you know, he's had these two fights back to back, and they're only two fights, man. You know what I mean? There's been people that have come back from far worse. So what do you think with his evolution? What do you think he needs to do now for his next matches to get back on top?
Look, he's had a bit of time off and he's reset, and yeah, he's hanging and he's back in there, you know. At the moment, it's more just the circumstances and what the UFC are doing, you know. But with this game, you know, 1 minute, I mean, when we took the Makhachev fight, Alex had surgery, his wife just had a baby. It was probably the first time in his whole career that he'd had that much time off. You know, I'd gone overseas. We didn't think, they told us we weren't fighting until next year, you know, so go have a break, enjoy your life, you know, and boom, you know, I'm overseas, I get a call, 11 days, we're on, you know. You know, there wasn't enough time for me to fly back, and so I had to go just directly there. So the last week, they just winged it at the gym, you know.
Joe, there's an interesting contender on the rise in featherweight. He's now number 3 in the world, Diego Lopez, and he's on a 5-fight win streak. And everyone says that this is most likely Volk's next opponent. I just want to get your opinions on him as a fighter and the Volk matchup. And also, I want your opinion on the fact that there's a lack of tune-ups in MMA, like to ease somebody who has been a champion, who has already proven themselves, to get back in there so they don't, you know, have that lull period. They just get chucked straight back into the contenders, which may or may not be beneficial for the champion to, you know, get back to the top.
I mean, the Lopez, I can see, you know, you've got a young guy, he's had a few fights, the confidence grows, and with that, they grow too, you know, because that confidence thing is such a big thing, you know, and that kid is getting better and better, and a lot of it is to do with just that mental thing that, you know, hey, I've beat these guys, now I can beat this guy. I seen it with Alex, you know, it was the same sort of a deal, you know, we just got there. So he is a hard fight. He's a young fight. You know, he's a young guy. But again, Alex has got that experience, and whether that fight plays out at this time or later, I don't know, you know. At the moment, they promised us the belt. Again, with that, the circumstances changed and they gave it to Max. And look, I don't want to talk out of school. We've had a few talks about different opponents. And look, I don't know. At this stage, they're not doing us any favours. They're making us sit here and wait. Hopefully, it'll probably be early next year. If not, I don't know, but Alex is ready to go and wants to go. It's just the right opponent, you know?
I feel like with what I said before, you know, in boxing, if there's a champion that's already proven himself, already done so much in the sport, he's dedicated his whole craft to it, gets the belt, and then if he loses it, he should get a not a lower contender, but a contender where it's a reasonable matchup. Because if you're losing to, let's say, Makhachev, who's pound for pound number one, I believe, and then who's on a 12-fight win streak, and then you have to fight another person on a 15-fight win streak immediately, a different story because it was a weight class move up. But after now the Ilya fight, I feel like champions who have proven themselves in the sport should get an opponent to lead them into their next matchup. How do you feel about that?
Look, it is, but look, again, a lot of the times it's got to do with money, you know what I mean? If they offer that money, of course, but you're not going to go from X and then get Y, you know, and you put that same amount of effort in, and they look at it, you know, from one fight, you have to do three fights to get, if you're fighting for the belt, you can do it in one, you know. So there's that side of it as well. And and when you look at Alex, you know, he's in the later stages of his career, and, you know, he's got a young family and everything else. At the end of the day, he wants to save himself and make as much money for his family, so then when he retires, he doesn't have to work or go back and be one of these guys that's fighting at 40, 45 on some Russian promotion because they need the money. Or look, some guys just love fighting too, you know. You can't say they all do it for money. There's just guys there that it's just in them and they don't care, you know, and yeah, power to them. But I know Alex, he's got an excellent strategy, which I think all fighters should, you know, and set themselves up and their families. And because it is a hard sport, it's hard on the body, it's hard, you know, you miss so many, you know, birthdays, friends' weddings, all sorts of stuff, yeah, because of camp and because you're away, you know, and people don't see that side of it. They just see, oh, yeah. You know, you're in Las Vegas and you got, you know, you're partying here and you're doing all that. But for the last, you know, 8 weeks, and I mean, realistically, it's a lifestyle. If you're good, you're training all year round. You know, you just, that 8 weeks just gets structured and built around that one opponent. But yeah, there's, and you're sort of trapped because you're training hard and you don't want to go out. You just want to train, rest, eat. Same again, repeat, you know, and that's the lifestyle of a fight camp, you know, if you're in a serious fight camp, because every session is you're putting in 100%.
Run me through that, Joe. You said about how your confidence leads into your skills and how the more confidence you get, the better that you get. You said that, I would have seen that for when Volkanovski fought Darren Elkins, and then he went on after he fought Jose Aldo, which was a massive fight at the time and still is. And then, you know, he all of a sudden, his trajectory went from this skill level to just being at his skill level now. I feel like there was a stark difference with the confidence and how good he was from Jose all the way to, you know, all the Max fights, and then having all that confidence in the Makhachev fight to really take it to him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and not only that, you've got to think that there was a whole lot of skill building in between. So every time between each camp, Alex would add a new thing, and that's what I'm sort of saying. Even to this day, he still wants to add new things to his game and just get better, and that played a big part of it, you know. Yeah, Alex didn't have the luck that he started doing martial arts or anything. I mean, he did wrestle as a kid, but it was only for a little bit. You know, he got in at a late stage, so he picks things up very quickly, but he's always wants to learn and wants to get better. And like I said, try things. If it doesn't work, we try something else, you know. But we're always, how could you say, experimenting with new things and how to make things better, and that's the way you evolve, I guess.
When you first worked with him, did you know the mentality that he had, or did it take a little bit to find that?
No, I knew straight away, you know. Well, what made it easy, Alex is a good guy, so it's easy to be around him, you know. And we like very similar foods. We like doing the same things, so it was easy because, you know, we're just mates as well at the end of the day, you know. Just and we both had this dream. He wanted to get into the UFC and I wanted to get a fighter into the UFC, and we said, let's do this journey, and we did it, you know. And we always said, you know, it wasn't just about getting into the UFC, it was about getting the belt, and now it's just about building that legacy, you know.
What's interesting, Joe, is that, you know, you're a very humble guy, but in my opinion, I feel like your team and Volk collectively have generated, first of all, the best Australian MMA fighters ever live, and also the best featherweight in the division to ever live in MMA. So I just want to ask you about how you stay humble. You've never mentioned that. You never kind of go out and say that. Why is that?
It's just my personality. Same as at the fights, yeah, people get nervous. Oh, I don't get nervous. It's just, you just got to, just a job. you do it enough times and,
Are you proud of it?
Yeah, of course I'm proud, but like I said, I don't think sometimes people remind me and tell me, but to me, I'm the same person I was before, or, and I've been around for a long time, just before the wheel, I think I was born, so I'm not going to change there, I'm just the way I am, I like doing what I do, and I don't think, I don't know, it's, I never look at it that way. I just enjoy doing it, and people say the travel and this and that, because a couple of guys just got back from Abu Dhabi and they got jet lag, and so I don't get jet lag. I enjoy traveling, I enjoy being with the boys and hanging out, and like I said, till I don't enjoy it, then I'll stop, but I enjoy the lifestyle that I'm leading,
Massive matchup for you, Holloway Topuria. Volk's fought these guys collectively, both of them together. He's fought them four times. And, he had not as much success with Ilya. He three-peated Max. Max is 18-0 at featherweight. Never lost. Volk's his only loss in the division, which just goes to show you Volk's success. So styles do make fights. Max is a long kicker. Ilya has seemed to have trouble with that with the Jai Herbert fight. So, it's not that easy to say, Ilya's the up-and-comer. He's going to outbox him. Max's fight IQ is off the charts. Volk even picked him as well. So what do you think about this matchup and who you're picking?
Look, I'd probably just have to go with Max. He's very, very tough, everyone says, his chin's going to give you. Even he says that everyone says this fight, it's going to be the one. And, he stands there with Gaethje, doesn't have to, and just goes for it, he's a goer, a gamer, and and like you said, he's fight IQ, he's a bit ragey out. It's going to be hard for Ilya, I think Max just, I think Max gets a decision on him.
I've got a question about your time. So you're always talking about how you travel and, you're bouncing around all these places. I've seen you coach at Bangtao, I've seen you coach at City Kickboxing and, your home freestyle. So what's the time split up per year? How do you organize that? Because it seems like it's a lot to organize if all these fights are occurring at different times.
Sometimes you get like, the Islam fight, for example, you get 11 days notice, boom, you're going, I've got a board there, and I look at, I've got to go to Bali, I think, in 3 weeks. I've got a couple of guys fighting in Bali, then 2 weeks after that, I've got a couple of guys fighting in Melbourne, maybe more. You just don't know. I had guys matched up for another show in between that, but that show got cancelled. So there's a board there, and whenever you can fit a date that you can get away for yourself, you can get away. But if not, you're away with the boys. It all depends. Look, sometimes I fly in on the day of the fight, depending on how many other guys I've got to get ready. So it's sometimes the board's full, sometimes it's not so full.
At any moment, did you feel weird about the fact that freestyle is actually a church?
No, not really. I think it's good. I just wish I got the tax benefits off it.
With Craig, When was the first time that you met Craig, and is he actually your favorite student?
Craig Jones.
Yes.
Craig Jones is my worst student, my worst nightmare. And it was probably the worst day in hell when I met that guy.
Yeah, so tell me the story. How'd you meet him? Did he did you invite him to the gym? Did he come to the gym? How'd it all start?
No, I met Riddell, and I met Craig in Vegas. We'd won a Maxis fight, but it was just a quick brief hello and goodbye, you know, and pretty cool guy. And then we were doing the Ultimate Fighter. We were trying to pick the team, you know, and we were going over people, and I went, Craig Jones. And all the boys went, yeah, perfect. So we got in touch with him, and he agreed. And then, yeah, just spending those couple of months there doing the show and everything, we just became friends, you know. Again, we like a lot of the same things. We both got really good banter, and we don't take life real serious. We like having a bit of fun, and yeah, I mean, they rang me, him and Nicky Ryan rang me yesterday, you know, from Colombia. You know, they want me to go back, you know.
Craig loves embarrassing you, and at some point he said that he's got footage of you that would cancel you immediately. So will this footage ever be released?
I don't care personally, but it probably would get me cancelled. But I don't care. I tell them, come around my house and try and cancel me. Do you think I care?
Moving back to freestyle, I want to ask you, seeing that we were talking about like what you allow and what you don't allow, what are the rules at freestyle? Can you list them for us?
There's two rules. My rules and my rules. So pretty simple. And do as I say, not as I do. Look. You just got to respect everyone, really. And just a general thing. I'm very, like, I think I've got OCD issues that, you know, if you use something, it's got to be put away, and the mat, you know, like the certain pads have got to be put a certain way, and, you know, the gym has to be cleaned every day and after each session. The general things like toenails, or, you know, the obvious ones that it gets through, and I don't know how they do it. You know, guys with skin infections, that's just, you get one and then that's it. It just runs through the gym. And people are just, I don't know, they just think that they still have to train if they've got a ringworm, and they don't know that they're just passing it through the whole gym, you know? Well, I didn't know what it was. Oh, mate, there's stickers, or not stickers, but like posters and things everywhere around the gym. Look for this thing. I mean, at one stage, I had to have somebody at the door, and as everyone walked in, we had to do skin checks, you know?
Are you serious?
Yeah, 100%. We have to look, you know, try to research anything and everything to try and, you know, clean it off the mats and everything. You know, it's only, you need the hot, boiling hot water. That's the only thing that really kills it. No other, whatever, you know, bleach and all those things don't get to the root of it, you know. They help, but anyway, it is what it is.
Out of all your pupils, they've had so many fights. So do you have a fight from all of your team that was your personal favourite fight? Do you have one?
And the boys were probably, the boys were talking about it yesterday and today, the Chad Mendes fight, because we were going over a couple of things that, we're going over the pressure that Alex was putting on Chad. I was going through that with a couple of the younger fighters, and how we broke him with his pressure. And that was probably after the fight was all over and we landed and we're picking our bags up. I looked at Alex and I went, we just beat Chad Mendes, man. That was probably one of the only times that I sort of hit me that, shit, we are somewhere, you know. And it was probably the thing I'm going, man, we can win a title. If we can beat this guy, we can get a title. Because he was always just on the edge of getting a title. I liked his style. He's tough, good wrestler, yeah, good hands. So, when we beat him, it was my favourite probably fight, and the turning point to I sent in Alexis Correa.
That was a sick fight. He dropped him with the body shot.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about MMA coaching. We mentioned it before. So there's a whole bunch of MMA coaches that I was reading up on this, and I was talking to some other people, some actual coaches in Australia, and they were telling me that there's some coaches that don't know the technique or the reasoning behind it, but because they see either someone doing it or clips, they put it into their their pupils arsenal, and it doesn't work as effectively as someone actually knowing their shit. So I want to ask you, seeing that you do know, what is something that MMA coaches are doing right now that is not finding them success for their team?
I don't really look at many other coaches apart from the coaches like from Bang Tao and City Kickboxing, because they're friends, and that's how I learn from them, and that's how you get better. But as part of watching other, I don't really. But one thing I'd say that it is a problem, I think, is putting it all together. So they'll have a striking coach, and they do striking, and then they'll have a jiu-jitsu, and then they'll do jiu-jitsu, and then they'll have wrestling. Where I think, and this is where what I do, is I try and put them all together so that all look the same. So when I'm kicking, when I'm going into kickboxing, I don't look like a kickboxer. When I go to boxing, I don't look like a boxer. And when I'm wrestling, I look like a wrestler. I want you to just look like you there, and you can do it all from that one place, you know? Obviously, you're going to have to move, but you don't want... especially like with the takedowns, a lot of guys, trying to punch into a takedown, they can't get it because they're just telegraphing what they're going to do, you know? And again, a lot of it is just a lack of proper practice and probably somebody not, their training partners and everything else not working with them and telling them, yeah, that was good, yeah, that was no good, you know? Because it's how you're going to get better.
You definitely hit the nail on the head, because when I was researching you, I saw that you've done, you did your karate, taekwondo, boxing, you black belt in jiu-jitsu as well. And when coaches, they do a singular class or a singular attribute of the game, they don't factor in the others. Specifically, one example I have is, jits. Sometimes you go to jits gyms and there's some positions where you can ground a pound from there, but they never drill that, so you would never know that, you're not safe in those positions. So I want to ask you, how did you kind of work around all those positions where you're not as safe? Like, do you really think about this type of stuff and drill it in the gym, trying to correct everybody's mistakes?
100%. Look, the approach that I've got to jiu-jitsu is completely, the way we do jiu-jitsu is completely different to any jiu-jitsu gym that you go to. You know that we do traditional type jiu-jitsu classes at our gym, but when I got the MMA guys, I go, we got jiu-jitsu for MMA, we got wrestling for MMA, our striking is for MMA, and that's how I get it together. So my philosophy is, we never want to be on our backs, we always want to be on top. So we just drill so much of that, getting in bad positions. If you're in guard, you don't want to be on your back unless you've been hurt or you're there. Your whole thing should be to get back up or get on top of that person, you know. Even the simple thing of taking someone's back, I don't want you to go to your back. I want you to take his back, but be on top of his back. Because the less that you spend on your back, there's less chance that he's going to be on top of you. Because at the end of the day, when someone starts punching on you and you're on the bottom, he's got gravity on his side, you know? I mean, some guys can win off the bottom punching, but that's very rare, you know? It's usually the person that's on top that's going to win. So we want to put those odds in our favor all the time. So unless, like I said, you've been hurt or for some reason you get stuck there. But yeah, you'll very rarely see my guys on the bottom. They will just scramble till they get to the top. And it's like I say to them, getting to turtle is not getting up. You've got to take those next couple of steps to get yourself right up. You see, jiu-jitsu guys are very, and I know myself because I've been there, that I'd get to turtle and I'd be comfortable in turtle, you know, because I'd use it as my break. Where in MMA, you can't rest there. You need to get up.
With that being said, you know, freestyle has focused on blending all those martial arts into the singular, you know, style. And you guys have prepared for so many different types of styles. Just to list a few, you know, Ortega was jiu-jitsu heavy. You know, Chad was sprawl and brawl. Holloway was just cardio punching. And then you had to fight the, you know, Dagestani styles, you know, that combat sambo that Makachev had. So, and also taekwondo and karate type kicks with Yair. And you guys had success with every single style, which is interesting because that's not what teams usually, the result teams usually get. So you guys are doing something different. And what do you think that is? Do you feel like you are preparing in a way where you've kind of listed the KPIs, like the key indicators, where you feel like you have to, like it's necessary for you to not be in a position with this person or exploit their positions where they're weaker?
It's probably a bit of both. But yeah, as far as like preparing, there's a lot of work, a lot of, you know, watching tape and then trying to bring in the right training partners. That's always hard, you know, especially for Islam. It was hard, you know, we were trying to get a lot of, you know, that Dagestani guys there, but no, we couldn't get them out here. But yeah, I'm like fortunate enough that we've got Craig, you know, as much as I hate Craig, he's very, very, as far as grappling and wrestling and all that, he's very, very smart in his applications and the way he looks at things. And I like working with him with all that sort of stuff. You ask him questions, you know, what about we do this? And yep, no, you know, and that really helps. And then, you know, we've got Frankie with his unique wrestling style, and he's just the best hype man in the business, and he's just great to have around in training camp. You know, he's just, not only is he a good training partner, he's, you know, he's the first guy there, last guy to leave. He's like I said, he's a hype man. He's good to have around fight camp, you know. He makes it fun and interesting, especially for me.
My favorite part about Craig's style is that he's got that sweep game. So he can wrestle, he does jits, but he's also got the sweep game that you see usual judo players do. And I really like those foot trips. Fighters that kind of have been shown to be effective with them are like Khabib, John Jones and stuff. And I want to get your opinions on that. Why do you think this is underutilized in current MMA? Everyone's favoring blast doubles and stuff, where you can get a cheeky trip, which might lead to a back take more effectively.
Look, I think it's just a lot of, especially in America and everything, it's very wrestling based. So, you know, they're not playing that trip sweep game more. That's more like a judo, maybe sambo, that type of style of game. And then, like you sort of said earlier on, you know, everybody sees that everyone's getting a double. So, yeah, and there's nothing wrong with getting a double and doing that, but it's just the way they're training, you know. That's my opinion anyway.
With the Makachev fight, you guys had trouble finding the right sambo partners. Since then, you've gotten, I believe, Tauriel Abasov. He visited the gym. He was a world champion.
Yeah.
So just can you run me through that? Why was it important to get Tauriel down there for sambo techniques?
Well, that was after the fight, I think, wasn't it? Yeah, it was after the fight he came down. Look, he'd been training at Bangtao, and George reached out to me. I think there was just stuff happening there, you know, him being Israeli, and there was shit happening, and he just wanted a bit of somewhere a bit safer to come and train. And yeah, he just came down and did his fight camp there with us, you know. And look, we get guys from all over the world all the time dropping in, you know, whether it's there for 2 or 3 months or longer or a couple of weeks. But yeah, boy, we're lucky in that sense that, yeah, Alex has got the name and the reputation, so we do get a lot of high-level guys reach out and come in and train at the gym.
I'm really intrigued about that combat sambo, because they've got a understanding of MMA that in particular positions they're very strong in, and other positions they're not as good. So seeing that you've just worked with a whole bunch of different sambo players, what's something that everybody listening at home now that's training, what's something that combat sambo does that you really need to implement for your MMA game?
Well, they're, like you sort of alleviated before, they're good at the leg trips and the sweeps and that kind of things that you don't see the typical wrestling do, you know. I mean, not everyone, but traditional, you know, wrestling, they don't do it. So sometimes it catches people off guard because they're not, they're used to balancing one way, and they're used to going, yeah, you're going this way, but I'm going to take you that way, and it catches people off guard, as if you've ever sort of trained with those guys, you know. But it's not, it is a great skill, but it's not a skill that's hard to learn, or, I mean, like with anything, you know, you just got to apply yourself to it. And if you listen to Craig, he doesn't believe in Sambo.
Because of the leg locks, right?
So, I don't know. Craig's just being Craig, you know. He put on like embedded came down, and he puts on a pig D, and he just Craig's just Craig. He's funny, you know. Even Islam and all of them didn't take him serious. They just knew that he was just having a bit of fun, you know. Which, yeah, if you listen and you know and you get around, you know that. Like I said, a lot of people take Craig. If you know Craig, you can't take him seriously with a lot of things. He loves to banter, joke, and, you know, have a bit of fun, which is what you need in life. You know, you don't want to take it too seriously. You know, so that's why it's good hanging around him. You know, it's always a good laugh, even if it's at my expense most of the time, but it's still good to have a laugh.
Joe, when I researched you, I knew that you've done all the security work and that you had a whole bunch of different gyms as well. So what was the first fight, and for what gym did you coach someone for their first MMA fight?
For the first time, my gym, when I started the gym, MMA was very much at its infancy stage. I remember I had the first cage in Wollongong, you know, and the local newspaper came down and did a story on it that we had a cage, you know, MMA was here, and I had a few amateur guys early days. A lot of them were early days, were in the ring, you know. There wasn't that many cages, and in a lot of places, cages were banned there for a long time.
In Perth, you're in Western Australia, right?
Me? No, I'm in Sydney, or in south of Sydney, but yeah, Wollongong.
So was that hard starting out an MMA gym at the very start of when you did freestyle?
No. Like I said, I did it because I sort of made a conscious move that I wanted to get out of, you know, working. You know, I turned 40. I was over spending my nights and everything in nightclubs and pubs, you know, dealing with, you know, idiots and the dramas of that comes with it all. And, you know, I'd set myself up, and, you know, the gym, that the church came available, you know, which is like 5 minutes from my house. You know, I live on the beach, and it was a lifestyle thing, you know, and that's what it started at, that I wanted to give a little bit back to that, what it given me, or, you know, give me my house and the gym and everything else. And so I just wanted to, I enjoy teaching, number one. And then two, I just thought, you know, the martial arts gave me this. I've got to give a little bit back. And by teaching it, so maybe, you know, somewhere along the line, it does the same as it did for me, you know. And then, yeah, it just went from there. It was more like I said, at the beginning it was, I'd just save enough cash and then I'd just take the family away on a holiday most of the time. It was a lifestyle thing, you know. I just wanted to retire from all the dramas and the headaches of clubs and pubs and enjoy my life.
With all your experience, we just listed a whole bunch of work that you guys have done with, you know, the foundational work with the karate and then, you know, the boxing, kickboxing, and then incorporating Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Now the Sambo's becoming meta in the game too. Out of all the martial arts, what do you think's the most underappreciated or overlooked in current MMA for 2024?
Look, the style of wrestling we do in NZ, and we're lucky, like I said, because, you know, having Frankie there, we do a lot more of the folk style wrestling, which is very different from traditional freestyle or Roman Greco. I mean, a lot of the moves are the same, obviously, but a lot of their grips and the way they do things is very, very different. They're very good, very big on re-gripping and not, yeah, you know, like you said earlier, you know, getting the double and then just sitting on the double. You know, if they've got a double, then I'm getting the double, they're going to switch to a single. If they're not getting the single, they'll switch back to the double. And it's a very high-paced, scrambly type of stuff. And then, you know, Frankie being, you know, earlier on at different gyms and now Bang Tao, you know, he's had the thing to train with a lot of guys from all over the world, whether they be, you know, Russian, Ukrainian, you know, Eastern Bloc countries. He's got to wrestle and train with so many different people from all over the world, so he picks up a lot of things that the average person who's a wrestling coach in America is not going to get, you know. And having that knowledge and him bringing it in and showing us is, you know, that's just gold.
With the folk style wrestling, you know, with the grips and all the different things for jits, what's the folk style wrestling like for the MMA gloves? Because I always hear from people that they always have trouble when it comes to grips and stuff for jits for MMA when they have the gloves on compared to our bare hands.
Look, obviously sometimes they can be a problem and sometimes they can be an advantage, you know. So, you know, sometimes, yeah, by having the glove, you can actually got a better grip on somebody because the glove adds that little bit of friction, especially around the chin or something like that. And then, like you said, sometimes when you want to do a rear naked, you know, the glove might get in the way. But, you know, the guys training with them day in, day out, you know, like when we do our MMA for jiu-jitsu or wrestling or whatever, the guys have got them on. When we do our war work, the guys have got them on. So the guys are training in those constantly. So they shouldn't be... how could I say, think that it's a problem on fight day, you know? I mean, the first five rounds that we do at the gym, they're done with 16s and they're horrible to wrestle with. Shin guards are horrible to have on, you know, because you can't cross your legs if you don't have that same ankle pressure because the shin guards are obviously, you know, blocking that path, you know? But the boys get around it, and then when they don't have it, it makes it easier.
What's your opinion on this? So I saw a whole bunch of clips in the Makhachev fight with, I believe it was with Volk Armin, the first one, and the Charles Oliveira fight, where he's got the glove and he puts his fingers in the glove to get the Sambo trip instead of grabbing the gi. What do you think about that?
I mean, that's been very widely spread now. You know, we even mentioned that Goddard before the second fight, you know, look at this, look at this. But it didn't get that way anyway. But anyway, we did bring it to the ref's attention before the fight.
I mentioned before with Jose Aldo, because he's one of my favorites just because of his longevity in the sport, just an impressive athlete. I believe the stat, he's actually, you know how everybody says John Jones is the youngest champion? It's actually Jose Aldo in the WEC before it was converted into the UFC.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, what do you think about Aldo now that he's moved from featherweight down to bantamweight and he's having a lot of success and his longevity in the sport?
Well, power to him, you know. He's obviously found some secret, you know, in him, because he used to struggle. That amazed me, that he used to struggle to make featherweight, and now he's gone down to bantamweight now. And I guess he's just got himself a good nutritionist and he's sticking to it. And, you know, I don't know what kind of training or whatever, but obviously whatever he's doing is working for him, and yeah, good luck to him and keep doing it, you know.
We listed all the martial arts that you've incorporated. Do you feel like karate's underappreciated in MMA?
Sometimes I think, yeah, just the footwork, and I think sometimes just the, I guess the way they train things is through, you know, maybe it's not suited the way they do it to MMA, but it's about repetition and just doing it over and over and over. And we do a lot of that, but we do it in a MMA sense. And again, like I look at, say, I'll give you two examples. I've got Volk. And then I got Colby, two different shapes. You know, Colby's got to evolve his game a little bit different to the way I evolve Volk's game. And so when we do our drills and we do everything else, I can't say this one card's going to fit all. I got to individualize everything. And look, it makes it easy. These guys are professionals. They know how to kick. They know how to punch. All I've got to do is just tweak it a little bit here for them, tweak them a bit there, because, like, at the end of the day, they can't see themselves. They need somebody to, a lot of times people don't know that they're doing things. So when someone points it out to them and then they want to fix it, that's how they get better.
Joe, that individualization that you're talking about, I want to ask you, seeing that you didn't have a trouble with Volk getting him to, you know, that will to win. He already had that. You didn't have to instill that into him. What about the other athletes that it's much harder for? How do you help them and instill that will to win in those guys?
Look, some guys will never get it. And you know, that's why not everyone's a champion, you know. People will... How could I say? There's some people there that want to be champions, but they don't get there because they just, yeah, maybe they're not physical enough, or there's something there or whatever. But the guys that become champions, they just tick all the boxes, you know. And I always say you've got to have that little bit of a mongrel in you, you know. And there's some guys that are super, super technical. This is just one example. And they tick all the boxes, but they've got no mongrel, you know. And as soon as they get hit or they get hurt, you know, it starts to break them. Where you get other guys, when they get hit or they get hurt, they go, man, you know, yeah, they bring it up a gear, you know. And that's that will to win, you know. They don't want to lose, you know. Volk, when he was caught in the guillotine, you know, a lot of other people went, on that's it, it's over, Ortega's on top of me, he's got his legs crossed underneath me. It's wrapped around my neck, and he just kept pushing on his hips and kept making that little space till something gave, and Ortega gave before he gave, you know. That's that willingness to, that mongrel in you that you're not going to give up.
Do you think, when I went on the freestyle side, I saw that Volk's listed as a coach, right, because he's probably cornered and helped the fighters there, of course, but if Volk dedicates everything into coaching and goes into coaching after his fighting career is done, how do you think he would do?
Great coach. Very knowledgeable. Knows his stuff, obviously. He's been there and done it with the best in the world. So, you know, if you can't learn from him, who are you going to learn from? I mean, look, and not all fighters can do that. I mean, like, let's say, example, Craig as well. You know, Craig is a great competitor, but can also break things down, look at things, work it out. And that's power to them, because not a lot of people can't do that, you know. But I think it helps the better fighters. A lot of them, that's how, especially with Volk always says that he's got to understand why he's doing the move. And once he understands why he's doing it, then he knows how to do the move, you know. And with him doing that, it's easy for him to break things down and teach it. A lot of the times it's harder for the, I guess, the gifted, more athletic guys, because they just do things naturally. And when they're teaching it, they miss the little points, because I'm guilty of that myself. Not because I'm great or anything. It's just because I've been doing it a long time, and you're just doing things, moving naturally that way, but not figuring. Then I'll watch them and I'm going, why are they doing it? Why can't they get it? And then I look at myself doing it, or think about how I'm doing it, and I go, yeah, they're not moving the hip this way to the side, or they're not putting their hand there, or they're not pulling the head to the arm. Just this one little thing can just change it. But you're doing it naturally because you've been doing it for 20 years that way, you know. And like I said, for the athletic guys, a lot of them just do it naturally because they're just gifted. And when it comes to teaching, it's hard for them to teach it, because they've just naturally had it, you know.
I think backstage or before a fight is, you know, crucial for the fighter's mentality, because, you know, if something could throw them off and then they have to regain, and the fact that they have to regain is also a problem. I feel like the worst thing that happened to Volk backstage was probably the second Holloway fight during COVID, when they woke him up midway through the night for the drug testing. So I just want to get it from you. What do you think was the worst moment backstage for any of your athletes? Do you think it was that one?
Well, that wasn't backstage in a sense, though. That was in the middle of the night. And
yeah,
I don't know if it was set up. I don't know. But it seemed dodgy to me. You know, we'd been there for a few weeks, and we'd programmed ourselves. I think we were going on at 5 in the morning or something like that. It was early start for us anyway. So Alex had been programmed that he'd be getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning. He'd have his coffee, he'd have something to eat, a little meal, just like we normally do for any other fight that we do. And then he was going to bed at 7. We didn't have to, whatever. Volk was sticking to his plan, and we get a knock at the door at 10:30, and the guy says, I need to test him, you know, and I'll go, mate, he's asleep. Going, I need to test him. And I said, well, are you going to go and test Max? He's gone. Well, I'm here to test him. I'm not testing Max. I said, well, I want you to go down and test Max as well. Because if you're going to wake him up, you're going to wake Max up. And he goes, oh, it's out of my questions. And I argued with him for ages. And then finally I got Alex up, and then Alex got up, and he'd gone to the bathroom before he'd gone to bed. And yeah, because he wants to have that full night's sleep. And then he couldn't piss, so he had to start drinking water. And by the time he filled the jar up, it was midnight, you know. And he was getting up in 3 hours. So he started panicking, so he took a melatonin and...
Combatant.
Okay, so we're back. So, Joe, I want to ask you, when you were doing the secchi work and the bouncer work, what was the hardest that you ever hit someone?
I didn't hit anybody.
Really?
Yeah, I think I've encountered on my hands. I mean, look, I had to defend myself, obviously, but it was more about defending, you know, defending other people and, you know, stopping the violence, not creating it.
What was the craziest thing that happened that you had to break up?
There was a busload, so a whole busload of Indigenous people came up from down the coast to watch the choir boys and the radiators, and there was six of us working, and there's probably 40 plus of those. I don't know how much of bus holes, but it was a whole bus load of them, and they turned it on. Yeah, that was pretty hectic.
What, did a fire break out?
Yes.
Yeah, what did end up happening? Did people get smashed?
Yeah, look, it's to our luck. Yeah, none of our security guys got hurt. You know, one of the managers got hurt. Yeah, they started a fight, and then the security went to break it up. And then, you know, obviously they, you know, their mates seen security grabbing them, and then they started it, and it was on. But we got them all out. I had some big boys work for me.
Good. We spoke about the fact that you have trained with different people, different coaches, different teams, and City Kickboxing is always brought up because the quality there is really good right now and has been for a while. When did you first meet Eugene Behrman?
The UFC in New Zealand, we went to fight over there. I'd met him before, but, we went and did our training at his gym, and I got to know him. And then when Alex fought Shane, then we became really close. You know, we went out and started hanging out, and
That's an interesting thing. I saw that you guys fought Shane, and then you ended up working with him, and you guys also fought Jamie Malarkey, and then he ended up going to freestyle for a little bit, and you worked with those guys. So what's that like for you, having an opponent where you go up against them, and then there being no bad blood, and you working with them later?
Well, to me, there's never no blood, you know. It's just the game to me, you know, like football or anything, you know. One of us got to win, someone's got to lose. There's nothing personal, unless somebody makes it personal. But for me, I just look at it as a game. With Shane, we actually got Shane in because Alex's opponent had pulled out. And for 2 weeks, I think we'd had like five different opponents and nothing was happening. Shane took that fight on a week's notice, you know. And Brad Riddell did a bit of that because, you know, that was our tie. And that's who introduced me to Eugene and Alex as well. You know, it was through Brad. So we're still pretty good friends with Brad.
There's a fight I want to ask you about. He fought all the freestyle guys. He's an undefeated prospect. I'm talking about George Mangos. He's ended up fighting the freestyle guys. You've seen him. He's won. He's undefeated. He's looking like he's a top prospect in Australia, a really young Australian that's undefeated. So what can you tell me about him? Do you rate him as a fighter? Do you think he gets into the UFC?
Oh, well, I'd hope he does. You know, he's putting in the work. He's got a bit of talent, you know, but you just never know with the UFC, you know. And, you know, when the pressure's on, he's actually, you know, for a young guy, he's come to the party, you know, especially against Justin, you know. He came back from adversity because Justin was really dominating him, and he came back. So, you know, credit to him. Let's hope he can, you know, have another good young Australian into the UFC.
When I was listening to you talk about the old unregulated fight scene, did you end up having any fights during that scene?
Like the UFC, MMA? No, I was too old then.
Did you compete at one point?
I've competed a few times, but, you know, it was hard. It was harder, especially earlier on when I was probably, in my peak and could have done something. I had a few guys pull out on me. I was starting my business, and I just thought to myself, why am I wasting, you know, the bulk of my business is on a Saturday night or a Friday night, and I'm here wasting time and energy, and no one's showing up, and when I could be out there, you know, building, you know, the business, which I did, and, you know, move forward. So that's what I did.
What do you remember from those fights?
Oh, just fights, you know. But I think there's probably a lot more pressure on you when you. Oh, it's different when you're doing security work, because you got to be. You just got to be more aware, you know. When you fight, there's just you and him, and you got to rest, you know. When you're doing that kind of work, there's just so many other variables that come in, so you've got to be pretty switched on. And again, yeah, 90% of the time, you stop all your trouble at the door, you know. If you can accomplish that, then you're going to have a lot less problems later on.
So you took to coaching. You found coaching more important than pursuing your own fight career. Run me through that, because did you ever want to be a fighter, or did you always want to be a coach?
No, I always wanted to be a fighter. I just had some bad coaches, and then, like I said, the scene was very quiet, and, you know, people would just, you know, you'd be matched and they wouldn't show up, and you'd waste all that time and energy for nothing. So, like I said, I didn't pursue coaching. I kept training and I kept doing what I was doing, but I just pursued my security business. Instead of challenging my energy in that way, I just put it towards that business and ran that side of it instead of going the other way, you know. And like I said, there was no money in it. There was no, you were just doing it for the love of fighting, you know. And I sort of thought to myself, yeah, you know, I can still fight and train and everything else, but, you know, that's not going to bring me the money in. So I just, you know, went that way.
Final question I have for you for today is it true that Volkanovski nearly quit MMA due to, like, financial struggles before he got into the UFC?
Yeah. I wouldn't say it was financial. I think it was just the letdown of the industry, you know. And that's what I was referring to with, you know, young George, you know. You hope these kids come in, you know, that's what they dream for, but the UFC can be really cruel, you know. Alex sat on that edge there for such a long time, you know. He, you know, married, young kid, had to move in with his mother, just to try and make it, you know. And at that point, we trained. It was a malarkey fight, actually. We knew the UFC was coming, and it was the day before AFC, and so the way I planned it, I spoke to the promoter about it, told him, you know, because back in those days, there was no Contender Series, there was no Ultimate Fighter, so most of the time, the way you'd get in is if you weren't known was as a last-minute call-out, you know, and that's exactly what happened. But this management company, they said that they were representing Alex, which they weren't. They said, no, Alex is already matched here, but I'll get you somebody else. And then Damian Brown got in and Alex didn't. So that was a bit of a heartache, you know, because Richard Walsh had pushed us and told us the spot was open, and we tried to make the calls and get it all happening. And you know, Sean Shelby said no, but they told us he was already matched, you know, through this guy, you know. And anyway, that's another story, and, you know, that guy has to live with himself anyway.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Joe, for coming on the show, and thank you for your time. Is there any final remarks you want to say to the fans at home as we wrap up the podcast today?
No, thanks for having me on, and yeah, that's about it.
Follow Joe on Freestyle MMA, Instagram, link in the description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you all next time. Bye-bye.
M coming for the kill.